this is Alma. It's my pleasure to introduce our work on the disk failure analysis and the proactive protection. This is a joint work with my EMC colleagues, Salma working at Datron. So we know disk failure is not rare in large storage system. The disk failure includes two typical modes. One is like the whole disk failure that you lose a connection. The second is like the partial failures that the disk is still functioning, but you lose some data on the second arrow. Therefore, the RAID system is widely used to protect data against those failures. We observe that the storage system itself is evolving. One observation is the storage systems are trying to reduce the cost by using less reliable drives, such as SATA drives. So it's possible that we will see an increasing number of whole disk failures in soon or later. The second one is we see the past two decades, the disk capacity keeps growth. So as a natural result, the secret number also increases. So it's possible that we will see more secret errors in the near future. The storage system people are full aware of those challenges. So we see many storage systems are adding extra redundancy to tolerate multiple failures. Like the industry has shifted from RAID 5 to RAID 6 several years before, which can tolerate two failures. And as there's ongoing discussion about RAID 7, which can tolerate triple failures. So it seems like all the storage systems try to ensure the data reliability by adding extra redundancy. The penalty is it degrades the storage efficiency. So the question is adding extra redundancy an efficient solution? Or can we say adding extra redundancy the only solution we have? To answer the question, it depends on our understanding of how disk fails or why disk fails. But we have very limited knowledge in that field. To bridge the knowledge gap and to develop a better data protection, we analyze 1 million SATA disks that are collected from our production system. We observe that there are some failure modes that are presented by the modern drives that are degrading the RAID reliability. So it's likely that the RAID will face multiple simultaneous failures sooner or later. We also find that the reallocated sector, a specific second error type, is a good indicator of disk reliability deterioration. In other words, a larger number of reallocated sectors means the disk is going to fail soon or is likely to fail quickly. So with this finding, we can conclude that the disk failure is predictable. Given this finding, we build a RAID shield, an active defense mechanism, which try to capture impending failures in advance so we can retrieve the data back from vulnerable disks before the failure happens. It includes two components. One is a single disk proactive protection, we call it plate. It's shipped in our system for more than 1 year, and we observe it has eliminated 17% of RAID failures. The second component is a disk group proactive protection, we call it Armor. It can help to recognize the vulnerable RAID groups, which are likely to meet multiple failures. So this is the talk's outline. I'll first go through the background and our analysis for the disk failures. Then I will introduce our work on the RAID shield, specifically how we identify RAID sector as a good indicator, its characterization, and how we do the proactive protection on the single disk at the disk group. So we know disk failure doesn't follow a simply fail stop mode, so there is no generic definition of failures. The production system we study here define failures as you lose a connection to the drive, or an operation exceeds the predetermined timeout, or the write operation fails. So those criteria are serving as the bottom line to replace drives that are functioning not properly. The data covers 6 different disk models. The population ranges from 34,000 to 384. This study in our system since 2008 gave us more than 5 years data to analyze their failures. Each drive is represented as family-capacity. The capacity number represents the relative size if they're from the same family. So A2 has a larger capacity than A1. I use the A2 driver as an example to introduce our findings. The first question is, what do real disk failures look like in the real world? So we collect all the failed drives in our system and categorize them into different buckets based on their lifetime. So the x-axis is the lifetime of different failed drives. The x-axis is the percentage. For A1 drive, you can find for the first year, the failure number is pretty low, but it keeps increasing in the second year and third year. And when they reach to the third year, surprisingly, we find more than 15% of failed drives are happening within 1 year. And when we analyze other drives, we find a similar pattern that a large fraction of failed drives are found at a similar age, which implies the failure rate is not constant. Second, we evaluate the circuit errors on the working disks. The first observation is the number of working disks that develop at least one circuit errors keeps increasing as a function of time. So at the third year, we find about 18%, about 10% of working disks have developed at least one circuit errors. Second is we monitor the average circuit error numbers on working disks. We find they also keep increasing as a function of time, like the average count increased 25% to 300% year over year. So we can conclude that the working disk has an increasing frequency of circuit errors. Because we see the disk tend to fail at a similar age, it means the failure rate is not constant. So at a certain time, the rate is facing a high risk of multiple simultaneous failures. But in the same time, we notice that the circuit errors on the working disk also keeps increasing. So it's like during the reconstruction, it's possible that the working disk already have some latent circuit errors, then you lose redundancy. So it sounds like that's the challenge we are facing. And all the solutions, like we try to ensure the reliability in the worst case, means we have to add in considerable extra redundancy. Because extra redundancy means you have more storage to store the parity data, make it very costly from a storage perspective. In the meanwhile, we notice that if multiple disks are tend to fail at the same time, that might imply there is a hiding pattern that affect the disk to fail. So if we can capture the hiding pattern, it's possible that we can proactively recognize the impending failures and migrate the data from the vulnerable disks before the natural failure happens. It means we can ensure the data safety with minimal redundancy and improve the storage efficiency. To explore this possibility, we need to verify whether there is a good indicator of impending failures. If we find that, what is characterization and how we can use that to develop the proactive protection? A potential indicator is like every disk errors that contribute to the whole disk failure or contribute to the reliability deterioration. A good indicator means it happens much more frequently on failed drive rather than the working disks, so it's correlated with the whole disk failure. The approach is like we can pull out the error value on the failed disk at the working disk and use the quantile distribution, the desired distribution, to quantify the discrimination. If there is a clear discrimination, it means it happens more frequently on the failed drive, so it's a good indicator. So the first experiment is we pull out the media error from working disks at the failed disks and build this desired comparison. The first point in decile is like 10% in percentile. The fifth point in decile is like 15% in percentile, which is also the median. So you can find there is a clear discrimination, like the fifth decile on working disk, which is represented in the blue curve, only have a 3 median error count. For the red curve, which represents the failed disk, the median number is 15. So it means the failed disk tend to have more media errors than working ones. But we also see here is an overlap between that curve. Like 19% of broken disks have less than 13 media errors, and 18% of failed disks have less than 14.7 errors. So there is a discrimination and also an overlap. So the discrimination is not significant. We're doing similar analysis on the reallocated sectors. We call it RAS for short. And you can find there is a clear discrimination. For example, 19% of working disks have less than 9 reallocated sectors. We call it RAS for short. For the field drives, 18% of field drives have more than 23 RAS count. And when we come to the media number, the median number on the working disk is just 0, while the median number on the field drive is 327. So we see a clear discrimination between the field drive and the working drive. In other words, it means the reallocated sector is strongly correlated with the whole disk failure. We did a similar analysis on other potential errors. We find that most field drives tend to have a larger number of reallocated sectors than working ones. In addition to the RAS count, we also find that the media error, pending sector error, and uncreatable sector error is also sort of correlated with the whole disk failure, but it's not that significant when compared to RAS. So we can conclude RAS count is a good indicator of impending disk failures. Since a very interesting indicator, we try to evaluate its characterization. The first experiment is try to evaluate the relation between different RAS threshold and the disk failure rate. So we monitor disks if they exceed a given RAS threshold and monitor how many of them are filled in the observation window. The observation window is said to be 2 months because it gives enough time for the disk to explore the internal issues. So the x-axis is a RAS count number. The y-axis is a disk failure rate. So you can find when the RAS count is just 0, the failure rate is just like 1.7%. When the RAS count keeps increasing, the failure rate also keeps increasing. So we can conclude that a larger RAS count implies a higher failure rate. The second experiment is try to figure out the time margin given different RAS count. So we collect the period between the time the disk passed the given RAS threshold at the time the natural failure happened, and represent the data, the time, with the box and the whisker plot. So the x-axis is a different RAS count. The y-axis is a time margin. For the whisker graph, the bottom is 10% on the distribution time, followed by 25%, median, 75, and 19. So you can find when the RAS count grows, the time margin keeps shrinking. For example, when the RAS count is 14, 19% of drives failed within 15 days. But when the RAS count increased to be 600, 19% of drives fails within 13 days. So we can conclude that a large RAS count implies a faster to fail. So with these findings, we can conclude that RAS count is a good indicator of the disk reliability deterioration. A large RAS count indicates a higher likelihood to fail, a faster speed to fail. Therefore, we can use the RAS count to predict impending failures in advance and retrieve the data back. To determine a good threshold, it means we need to figure out how many failures we can capture and how many working disks we will capture for mistake. So we use a RAS count on our historical data to say how many failures we can capture. It's presented with the red curve, and how many working disks will fail for mistake. That is presented with the blue curve. The x-axis is RAS threshold. The y-axis is percentage. So you can find when we set the RAS threshold to be 20, we can capture 17% of failures. While the penalty is pretty high, it's like we will fail the working disk for we will fail 4.5% of working disk for mistake. Because the working disk population is much larger than the field one, so we are more sensitive to the false positive number. We notice that If we increase the RAS count to be 200, we can capture 15% of impending failures, while the penalty is less than 1%, which is a reasonable price we like to pay. Another way is when you try to set a threshold, you also need to think about how much time margin you need to replace a drive before the failure happens. There are more discussions in the paper about how we determine 200 threshold as our threshold in our initial deployment. So we're going to deploy the single disk proactive production in our system. The first bar is like the number of with failures we have. In such case, we have to retrieve the data back from our application. It's normalized to be 100%. From bottom up, the 5% is the hard failures we have. It's like the HBA issues, like the bus adapter issues. The others is like we can't recognize the exact reason from our log system. As 18% come from the triple failure, which is like a combination of whole disk failure and second errors. The right bar is like how many failures we have after the deployment. It's challenging to do anything for the hardware issue as others because it's not a disk problem. But we find we eliminate 17% of triple failures. So that's a good improvement. So that's also the beauty of the data science. It's like the process is very challenging and full of others' work, but the conclusion is very simple. The single disk proactive production is not like the end of the world because we still have some corner cases. Like we still have 10% of remaining triple failures. The reason is the plate can miss some cases, like the read failure is caused by multiple less reliable drives. None of them RAS count have exceeded the threshold. The single disk protection can't figure out this issue. Another way is it cannot prioritize the read groups if they have a different risk degree. So that's also our goal for the armor, the read group proactive protection. I use an example to introduce the motivation. So the first group is including all the host groups. They are marked in green. Second group have two Suunto failed drives. They are marked in red. The third one only have one Suunto failed drives. The last group including multiple less reliable drives, but they are still qualified for working. So for the plate, it's like it will send out the warning to replace disk 3-4. But it can't identify the vulnerability of group 4 because none of their RAS count have exceeded the threshold. It couldn't differentiate the priority between group 2 and group 3, even if group 2 is more likely to meet read failures. For the group protection, I mean armor, we expect armor can detect the vulnerability of group 4 and also can identify the different priority of group 2 and group 3. So the methodology is like you can use the historical disk data to build in the mapping between the failure rate, the failure probability, and the RAS count. So you can calculate the single disk failure probability through the Bayesian theory. After you collect every single disk failure probability, you can calculate the probability for rate to meet multiple disk failures through the joint probability. There are more details discussed in paper. So we applied this algorithm to the historical data. The blue curve represents the read groups that have no failure before. We collect like 5,000 read groups to present data. The read curve indicates the vulnerability on the read groups that have more than one failure before. So you can find there is a clear discrimination between the vulnerability between the vulnerable read groups and the health ones. So we can conclude that the discrimination shows armor is an effective methodology to recognize endangered disk groups. And we also find that the disk group monitor system can capture those failures not captured by the plate. So there are some related work from Google. They report that they see some metrics in smart table, such as react sectors, indicates impending failure. But they also find that only half of the failure disks have such error. This is different from our findings. The potential reason is we have different workload. We are running in a backup environment, so we have more likely to meet React sectors. Second is we have the read rewrite process. Other interesting work is like some people use the latency to predict failure or doing some similar work in the smart production. The difference is we are more interested about the disk group level monitor at production. So this is summary. We analyze 1 million SATA drives and find the rest count is a good indicator of impending failure. So we conclude the disk failure is predictable. With this finding, we developed the read shield active defense mechanism, which includes 2 components. And it's running as a single disk production is running our system. And for the armor, we are still discuss the future deployment because we need to test the robustness in different occasions. So we find the answer to our original question, whether adding extra redundancy a final solution. The answer is yes and no. Yes is we need some redundancy as to ensure the data reliability. The no is the proactive replacements. Make sure we can provide the same level of data protection with less storage cost. So that's the talk. Thanks.
Hi, I'm John Osterhout from Stanford. Could you go back to the very early slide where you had the failure rates? I'm curious about what that says about overall disk reliability. It's like your second or third slide, very early in the
Is this one?
No, much farther back than that.
After that, right?
The very early raw data on failure rates, like your second or third slide. Yes. So that number 46 in the bottom graph, does that mean that 46% of all disks failed in that time period, or only 46% of the total number of disks that failed across the entire time period? What's that a percentage of?
As a percentage, like the percent of failed drives that happened in that time bucket. This is just based on the failed drive, not including the total population.
So that says then that the failure rates drop off significantly after the third year. So if a drive lives into its fourth year, it's probably going to live a very long time. That seems to suggest that.
I think it's like this is just the one pattern here. It's like the peak happened during the period of the disk lifetime. Some pattern is like the peak happened at the end of lifetime. Now we are not really sure what's the reason that caused the peak happened during the middle time.
Okay, this data, at least for these drives, again, it's like it's a midlife mortality thing. Once you get past midlife, the failure rates start dropping off significantly.
I think it's like there might be multiple factors that will affect the failure distribution. Now we are not really sure what's the exact reason. This is just like what we see from the data, different data.
Your data is also 5 years long, right?
Yeah, the data is 5 years long.
Yeah, just about that. I mean, but it's possible that also maybe you've actually taken some of those drives out of production by the fourth year a lot of times. Do you have any information about that kind of data? Were all these drives run to the same length of time?
We won't replace a drive if there's no errors, right? It's just right. Like the disk has some issues, like we meet the criteria, etc. Then we replace the drive.
Right.
So that's how it works.
Zeph White, CW Madison. Just relatedly about the same data set, I noticed there's, if I'm remembering correctly, other studies of similar data have shown significant infant mortality in drive failure rates, you know, like failures fairly early in lifetime, but you have zero here in both graphs. Is that due to some like pruning thing EMC does to weed those out before they get into production?
I think it's like for the data pruning here, it just includes two models. In our paper, we have 6 different models, and the 2 models have the similar pattern like you mentioned, the infant mortality. So it's like a different driver may have different failure pattern. But for this peak pattern, we see that for 4 drives out of 6 different models, we're starting here.
Thanks.
We'll take one last question.
Hi, Arkady Kanevsky from Dell. I have a quick question. The Did you find out the characteristics of the failures are different across SAS versus SCSI or across different manufacturers before you can kind of apply that technique more globally? And the secondary part of the question is if you are able to predict when the disk will be failing, should we basically step back from RAID and just have a very simple protection, and then since you're going to be rebuilding anyhow before you're failing stuff, so should we kind of start stepping back from more comprehensive protection across many disks into simpler models?
The first question is, so far we only covered SATA drives because most of our storage system are using SATA drives. It might be an interesting idea to explore the idea to cover SAS drives and figure out whether different disk drives from different vendor have different pattern. We haven't done that yet. The second question is it's just like our initial step to deploy the single disk production and to see how it works. In the meanwhile, we are still polish our monitor mechanism, so it gives us more flexibility to tooling the proactive production in the long run. Thanks.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Thanks.